This is the Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson. We are live from the Truby Arts Center at Shell Point Retirement Community in Fort Myers with our partner WGCU. Thank you, everybody, for being here. It is a terrific facility, a terrific audience, and it is great to have Joanne Hartley and her jazz trio along with us as well. Fellas and Joanne, thank you for being with us for the whole hour. We've got a lot to talk about here in this live edition out on the road for the Florida Roundup here in Fort Myers. Let's start with property taxes, because Florida voters are going to decide in November whether or not to give homeowners a bigger tax break here in the Sunshine State. It's a ballot referendum that would increase the value of a home or condominium that's exempt from property taxes as long as the owner lives in the condominium or the home. If approved by voters, that homestead exemption would jump from $50,000 currently up to $150,000 in January, and then $250,000 tax-free a year later. So, are you ready for that property tax break? How could it affect your parks, your libraries, your roads? You can email us. We're monitoring the inbox today, radio@thefloridaroundup.org, radio@thefloridaroundup.org, and all of our audience live here at the Truby Arts Center, Shell Point Retirement Community, have some note cards. Write those questions on us for us, and we'll get to your questions here today, because we're going to be speaking with the mayor of Cape Coral, just across the Caloosahatchee River. You can see Cape Coral from the banks here of the river, and it is one of the largest cities in Florida and the largest in Southwest Florida. John Gunter is with us, mayor of Cape Coral. Your Honor, thank you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation and honor to be here.
It's great to talk to you. So do you support this ballot referendum regarding property tax exemptions?
Well, I do believe it's probably going to pass, but I think it's extremely important to make sure that we get out to the community and explain exactly what the ripple effect will be as a result of this.
So you expect it to pass. Will you vote for it?
I probably will vote for it myself. I think as a resident of Florida, I think all of us would like to see our property taxes go down. I've always advocated for that while I've been in elected office. But I want to make sure that the residents know what exactly that means and what could happen as a result of it.
So talk to us about what does it mean for the budget of Cape Coral. It's about $1.5 billion a year that you and your commissioners have to allocate. What does a drop in property tax revenue, what would it mean?
Yeah, in the city of Cape Coral, based on today's assessed values, we bring in about $160 million a year for our property taxes.
Okay.
That's what our revenue that we bring in. If this initiative passes, we will see a $28 million reduction out of that $160 the first year, and a $47 million reduction the second subsequent year. So about 30% in that second year. So
30% of the property tax revenue.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of people get confused. They think, well, you have a $1.5 billion budget. This is solely for property taxes, the $160 million.
So every dollar counts, certainly, in a budget. What would that mean for today's services next year if Cape Coral sees that property tax revenue decrease by tens of millions of dollars?
Yeah, out of that $160 that we bring in, $110 million of that $160 we spend today in public safety. And I think that's important. Almost two-thirds of that money is going solely for public safety. So if we are going to have that reduction, that leaves about $50 million left over the $160 this year. So if we have a $28 million reduction or a $47 million reduction, that's going to be your parks, that's going to be your roads, your code enforcement, those types of...
Because you wouldn't touch the public safety budget.
I wouldn't personally.
Gotcha. Some legislators have talked about requiring public safety to be continued to be funded at today's levels or beyond. And so the number of options you and your city councilors would have about finding those tens of millions of dollars would be limited.
Yeah, and that's what the referendum, a lot of people don't realize we'll actually get that reduction, but also the legislation has put in that they are telling us exactly what the monies that are left over, what we can and can't do with those monies.
So parks, libraries, where else would you be able to find those millions of dollars?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're going to have to take a look at is, a hard look You know, a lot of residents have, you know, stated, well, you know, do we have enough fat in the budget in order to cut that amount of money? The answer to that question is no. We will have to take a hard look at some of our services that we provide, some of the programs that we provide, and there will have to be some reduction in services to some level in some of these other programs that we're going to have to look at. Or you would have to look at charging fees in order to compensate if you still want those type of programs. I think it's, you know, extremely important to determine the level of service. No matter if it's our city or any city throughout the state of Florida, you have to determine what you want to provide as a service to the community.
You're comfortable, it sounds like, as a constituent and a homeowner. You own a home in Cape Coral?
Yes, sir.
You sound like you're comfortable as a homeowner and constituent voting for this measure, and yet as an elected leader acknowledging the uncertainty that it leaves you in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a homeowner, like every other homeowner, they want to see a reduction in their property taxes, and that's all well and good. But I think the most important question is, then what type of services would you not like to have afforded?
So how do you answer that for yourself as a homeowner, as a community member, as someone who's going to be leaving City Hall at some point in the near future?
Yeah, I think...
What kind of community do you want?
Yeah, and I think that's it, exactly it. I think that, you know, let's talk about the parks, for instance.
Okay.
We spend a lot of money. We have spent a lot of money, about $88 million in the last 5 years for our park enhancements. And we pay for a majority of that. Some of it comes from a parks go-by referendum, which was $60 million. We added another $28
million. Go is a general obligation bond.
Right. Yeah. So I think what you're going to see a lot of times with our future parks in our city, that you're going to have to advocate for additional parks go-bond referendum on the ballot in order to be able to fund those types of programs.
So more borrowing backed by what revenue if your property tax revenue is decreased?
Exactly. Like now we take money out of that general fund to offset some of those
right.
additional, that $28 million that I talked about. We won't have that luxury in the future
right.
if this passes.
Right.
So I think you're going to see more programs, referendums similar to that if you want to enhance park improvements moving forward.
So the borrowing's got to be paid back by something, right? And if it's not property taxes, what is it going to be, Your Honor?
Yeah, exactly. And that could be, again, it could be either additional fees or it could be additional a referendum for specific projects like the park price projects, those type of things.
Can you imagine charging a fee to visit a park in Cape Coral?
Now
like
I can't,
a state park?
Yeah, I can't. Impact fees, we may have to look at our impact fees, where growth is paying for growth moving forward. You know, we do have impact fees now. So I think what we're going to have, we're so used to the way things have been for so long. This is going to be a different animal, and we're really going to have to look outside the box. We're not going to be able to do things like we have been doing.
Would you advocate addressing, should this pass as a mayor, would you advocate raising the tax rate on the property taxes that is assessed for homeowners?
Yeah, well, I've been in office since 2017, and over this eight-year period, I have lowered the millage rate or supported. It's not just my vote,
right.
It's our council.
Yeah.
But I have always advocated and supported to try to reduce the millage rate as much as possible each and every year.
You're about, what is it, $5.25 per $1,000, roughly?
Yeah, 5.14 is our millage rate.
Okay.
When I first got elected, it was 6.75.
If you had millage rate on your bingo card here at the Tribune Arts Center, you mark it down here. You can't talk about property taxes without that sneaking out, can you?
Yeah, so that, you know, we have reduced that over the last 8 years more than any other time period in the city. So I'm not an advocate for raising that. 411, 67 counties throughout the state. I think you will see some other municipalities that will have to raise their millage rate in order to offset this reduction. I will not support that. I think that is a very...
You're not going to seek this out by a higher tax rate.
Exactly.
You're going to seek it out through fees and other types and service cuts.
And more efficiencies with that.
I see. Right. And of course, from a homeowner perspective, that property tax may or may not be tax deductible on your federal income tax, but the fees that you spend are not tax deductible. Those are not something that you can then go
go back and try to recapture in some other way.
Exactly. You know, my father used to tell me many years ago that everything that glitters isn't gold. And that's exactly, the most important thing that I can express to residents that are going to be voting for this, whether it's our city or throughout the state, know what the ripple effect is. What is it going to cause?
We got an email here from Joy, who's listening in. Joy, it's great to have you along here as we're doing our live program for Fort Myers. You can join us on the email radio at thefloridaroundup.org. Joy writes, homestead exemptions have always existed in Florida, but never this broad and budget busting. That's the proposal. Joy writes and asks, what is the likelihood of adding means testing or minimum age requirements, for instance, over 70, to qualify for a higher homestead exemption? What do you think about that as we sit here in a retirement community in Fort Myers?
You know, one of the things that I've said with this property tax reform is several things. I think that this is a great idea. As you get older, maybe you get a more of a reduction. You know, when you get on a limited income, I think would be a good thing to take a look at. One of the problems that I had with the referendum is it's being applied within a 2-year period.
Very quick.
And if it was maybe stretched out to a 5-year period to give counties and municipalities the opportunity, since this is going to be a life-changing type of an approach.
Yeah.
In a 2-year period, it's very aggressive.
Accounting talk on the radio is always going to put people to sleep, but I got to ask this question here. When does your fiscal year begin?
October.
And this would take effect in January.
Yeah, where a lot of people don't understand.
4 months into the fiscal year.
Yeah, we're doing budget discussions today.
Right.
In the next couple months, we have to pass our budget in September for October, not knowing what the result of this referendum ballot is going to be.
Stephen in Fort Myers is with us here at the Arts Center. Stephen, thank you for your question, asking, is it feasible to think Lee County will ever be able to install sewer hookups for all the septic tanks?
Yeah, I mean, I think speaking with Commissioner Ruane here at the county, they're going to lose about $125 million. So that's pretty substantial for them as well.
Million here, million there, as the saying goes.
It's going to... What my fear is that we are going to transfer the burden on some of these programs to the taxpayer in fees and assessments. And, if we're doing that, then we're not saving them any dollars. And so I'm not saying that we will do it here in Lee County or the city of Cape Coral, but I guarantee you throughout the state there are going to be cities and counties that will do that and maybe even get back to where they are now.
John Gunter is with us now. He's the mayor of Cape Coral. We're live at the Trivia Arts Center at the Shell Point Retirement Community here in Fort Myers. It's great to be along with you as we take Florida Roundup on the road. Let's talk about the housing market, as Cape Coral is a bit of a crucible of the Florida housing market, particularly the single-family housing market. The average price of a home sold in Cape Coral a couple of months ago was just under $400,000. Is Cape Coral still affordable?
Yeah, I mean... We are definitely, if you look at the average sale of a house, we are definitely been increasing, especially since the pandemic.
Sure.
Since the pandemic is when we really started seeing big changes. I can tell you, I just looked at this data yesterday. Back in 2022, we were issuing about 5,000 new single family permits a year.
Okay.
Today, we're doing about half.
And the reason is?
And I think a lot
cost.
Of it, yeah, the cost, I think the uncertainty.
We have less land, too.
In the economy. Now, we're only 55% built out, so we're okay, I think,
right.
On the land side of it. But the uncertainty in the economy and the cost, I'm a home builder myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that a house that I built today, over what I built, say, 4 to 5 years ago, I'm paying 30 to it's costing me 30 to 40% more for this.
Mostly materials or labor?
Both.
Both. Are you buying? Are you building spec houses without buyers?
Both.
So you're willing to take that risk, even in this market. Condominium prices are down about 5% compared to a year ago, which is improvement over the past several years here. This was one of those areas that really saw a big impact with the reforms put in place after the Surfside collapse of that building and that tragedy not that many years ago. What's your assessment of the health of condominiums in Cape Coral?
Well, I can tell you that we've seen a drastic reduction in especially rentals. You know, we've had a couple large projects in Cape Coral for multifamily units that they are renting them, and I've noticed here in the last year, you're really starting to see those cost of those monthly rentals that are coming down. So that's good for the community. But also what you're seeing is a lot of vacant rental property as far as multifamily units. You know, speaking with a few bigger developers in our community that were really looking to expand in the multifamily world, they've kind of put a pause on it.
And why is that? Is population growth slowing down?
I think you're seeing more supply than demand. So that's why you're seeing some of those developers putting the brakes on.
So with that, foreclosures, while still low in Cape Coral and in the Cape Coral metropolitan area, they have been rising. They've been rising by double digits. Folks don't have to have too long of a memory to think about foreclosures in Cape Coral in 2007 and 2008 and 2009. Is this something on your radar as you finish up your mayoral term? Is this something beginning to rise up in some concern about the affordability of folks who have homes and their ability to continue to stay in those homes in Cape Coral?
Yeah, as far as the foreclosure rate, I know it has been rising a little bit here recently, but I think we are in such a different place today than we were in 07, 08, 09.
Yeah.
That's when I moved to Cape Coral in 2007, so I remember driving down the street, and there wasn't a street you couldn't turn on that didn't have a foreclosure.
Right.
I think it's something that we got to keep an eye on it, but I think, Southwest Florida is so desirable. There's people moving from all over the country, all over the world. You know, we get people from Germany, Canada moving down. So it's something you have to keep an eye on, but I think it's such a drastic difference than it was in 2007.
Well, let me ask you about storm preparedness here, because it's been 4 years since your community was hit by Hurricane Ian, 2 years since Hurricanes Helene and Milton. What do you make of the assessment of the preparedness of municipal government to respond in real time as a storm is brewing in the Gulf or the Atlantic and has its sights on Cape Coral for the kind of preparation that the community needs to partake in the evacuation notices and
shelter openings, those types of things?
Yeah, when you look back in the history here, you've never seen a storm surge was a real threat. Hurricane Ian changed that overnight. So I think we have a whole different perspective and, you know, how important. I remember Hurricane Irma and some other ones that when I was here, you know, they talked about, oh, we were going to see a 12-foot storm surge. But it never happened, and it never has happened. So,
but do you think the community is prepared, and your public safety folks are prepared to issue those warnings in advance, far enough in advance?
Yeah, now today we're buying high water type vehicle for evacuations and things like that.
Okay.
So we have a whole different mindset than we did, just like the community.
All right, Mayor Gunter, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much.
Very good. John Gunter, the mayor of Cape Coral here, as we're live at the Tribune Arts Center in Fort Myers at the Shell Point Retirement Community. It's a live edition. The Florida Roundup is on the road. Be sure to join us on our email, radio@thefloridaroundup.org, radio@thefloridaroundup.org. Coming up, how to continue living healthy, how to make sure we live healthier and longer. What's involved with making sure that we, live longer, but we enjoy those extra years that we can add? That's coming up here as you're listening to the Florida Roundup from your Florida Public Radio station. It's the Hartley Jazz Trio, Joanne on piano, Warren on percussion, playing the drums and the brushes out there. Warren, we love it. And Terry is on bass. He's also got a flugelhorn. Maybe he'll break out a little bit later. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. We are live today from the Tribune Arts Center at the Shell Point Community Center, the Shell Point Retirement Community here in Fort Myers. It's wonderful to be in front of such a great audience. We are so welcome, and we are so grateful for all the hospitality. On the program next week, it is our summer reading special. right? We're going to break out the books for us. A couple of Florida authors with two very different thrillers. One is an autobiography of the writer's father, who was a drug smuggler back in the 1970s and 80s, and he died in a plane crash with the author on board when she was just 5 years old. She does not think it was an accident. It is a fascinating story that she tells, an investigation into her own childhood and her father. The second book that we talk about next week is a novel set here in Florida, in Fort Pierce. And the writer credits heavenly inspiration for a very, very dark tale. It's a fascinating psychological thriller. So it's our summer reading special that is next week. Today we are live in Fort Myers here at the Tribune Arts Center at the Shell Point Retirement Community, and great to be here. And what better place to talk about getting older but staying healthy? Florida, after all, is home to one of the largest populations of people over the age of 65. In fact, one out of every five of us here in Florida has already celebrated their 65th birthday. Who in our audience has already celebrated their 65th birthday? There's a few hands up. Well, congratulations for making it to that milestone. Way to go. We're proud of you. So what's your key to a healthy life in Florida? You can join our conversation as we're live on this Friday in Fort Myers, and we're monitoring the email inbox, radio@thefloridaroundup.org. What's your secret to that healthy life? Is it a mango a day? Could be a mango a day. radio@thefloridaroundup.org. Sean Felton is with us now, Dean of the College of Health and Human Services at Florida Gulf Coast University here in Fort Myers. Sean, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
Great to have you here. So, how is Florida doing living healthy longer?
We've got some work to do.
Yeah.
I great stat here, not to bore people, but only an academic could bring this here is, the average lifespan in Southwest Florida is 81.7 years.
Okay.
So we're a little bit north of where we are across the state.
Okay.
However, we have about a 13-year difference between what we're really focused on is the health span versus lifespan. So what that means is health span is those years without chronic disease, long-term challenges, et cetera. But we have a larger gap here in Southwest Florida than we do across the state.
So if the health, the lifespan is 81, that means the health span is ending at 68?
768,
yes. Yeah, right. So what is contributing to that gap?
Well, there's several pieces. Obviously, the biggest piece there is the chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
You still see that through, our heart disease, stroke, mental health issues.
Diabetes.
Diabetes, et cetera. The chronic issues that really begin very early in life, that is often unrecognized early, and it continues on. So I think one part is obviously the way we're approaching this at FGCU and with our Shady Rest Institute on Positive Aging is to really look at what we can do at the, North 65
mm-hmm.
area, but then also what can we really be doing in the early years as well, because it's a lifelong piece. It's not, you might do the mango, or you might do your Aperol spritz that you talked about.
I talked about that before the radio show,
okay,
Sean. That was just for in the house here.
Sorry. It's a live audience. But regardless of that, there's not one magic piece.
Right.
And it's a piece that's really going to take us a long way to get where we're going, and we have a bold goal.
You do have a bold goal because you want to increase the health span by 7 years by the year 2040. So that means that health span goes from 68 to, if I add 7 to that, what's that, 75?
Yes.
Yeah, so that is a bit of an audacious goal. How will you measure that?
Yeah, so we've got some great work, and it's a lot of partnerships across Southwest Florida, and I think we're at the right place at the right time to do this. A good friend of mine, former CEO of Lee Health, Jim Nathan, talks about people coming to Southwest Florida to live and thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of our partners are really engaging in this. But how we're going to measure is we're going to use the Florida scorecard. You got to have some metrics there. And we're really utilizing the 8 dimensions of health, the National Institute of Health measures. And we've built them into, I would say, buckets for us to measure in terms of vitality, stability, growth, in terms of focusing on those areas. And what I want to really focus on as well is the importance of the education sector.
Mm-hmm.
We look at health span because the word health, that it's all healthcare related, and it's well beyond that. It's the connection of educational attainment. It's the connection of being here in the audience today, being lifelong learners and continuing that strive for knowledge. It's educating our youth to move forward. It's also financial planning. It's also long-term estate planning and the stresses and caregiver planning. And as I said, you could first look at this feels like you're boiling the ocean type area. But honestly, you start breaking this down and finding areas that's going to navigate this and make progress.
What role does access to the appropriate health care play in the health span? Because we know there's a large demand on health care supply and services, certainly here in a community in Southwest Florida, retirement community. And we know that economics play a significant role. Insurance coverage, Medicare, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah, healthcare is a huge piece.
Right.
And as I mentioned, the chronic disease makes up about 90% of the cost of healthcare. So the focus is focusing on the health span, hopefully lowering some of those costs, insurance premiums. You know, a policy change could occur, you know, for more preventative type services. I see you see that, but I think also in the activity pieces would be a thing to look at, you know, down the road.
Reward people somehow for staying mobile.
Absolutely.
With a better premium.
Absolutely. But healthcare access is critical, but it's also in that more preventative piece. I think, you know, as you look at especially, you know, young individuals that might be growing a family, or especially college students. Mm-hmm. Many students come without health insurance and, you know, delay some of that care early on. So getting that early access to prevent chronic disease, and, you know, I think prevention is one of our critical pieces, but especially in season. Our EDs get a little more crowded around
in
here.
Season, right? The emergency departments here in Southwest Florida, when everybody is escaping the cold up in the Upper Midwest for the most part, yeah, or other places.
Exactly.
So that sounds like that. I mean, the access to healthcare is one of those barriers. I would expect that you've run across as you look at trying to expand this health span. What are some of those other barriers?
Yeah, you know, I think it's the, as you alluded to, the healthcare access. I think the other is really understanding the vernacular around it.
What do you mean? You
always look at, hey, we want to live long, you know, and as I mentioned, the 81.7 years, the average lifespan in Southwest Florida. But when we first introduced this at March 18th at our event, we had a world-renowned speaker come in, Ken Dykewald, CEO and founder of AgeWave, to really start talking the description of what health span is. That's a new vernacular for areas. So really, part of this is educating individuals on what health span is. So we want to add quality years of life to everyone. And I think that's both as a person that's aging, but then also the caregivers that's there. I know all of us have dealt with, you know, or an aging parent or an aging loved one, and there's a lot of stress with that's affecting your own health span as well.
Yep.
So those barriers are there, and I think just enough resources to get people in front of this as well.
Former U.S. Surgeon General and Floridian, Dr. Vivek Murthy, has called loneliness an epidemic. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
I believe so, and I think it really came forward through COVID. And, you know, where people were in homes, that loneliness, that isolation, and it really has advanced the aging of several. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we here in Southwest Florida, we do have an access problem to mental health professionals. We got great mental health professionals. Us at FGCU are, you know, producing great social workers, counselors, psych mental health nurse practitioners. But we do have a bit of a mental health desert here in Southwest Florida.
So that's on the part at the point of seeking
care.
Professional care, right? There's a larger swath in there, and I think that the former Surgeon General is talking about is just the building of community,
building
of connections.
Being connected, being a part of a still.
Doesn't take a Medicare card to get that.
Doesn't do that. It's, you know, being engaged in volunteerism, citizenship around, being connected to a community here. I think, you know, everyone at Shell Point, you know, has that community, but then how does others that's not part of a community here create that other community piece? And I think that's another area.
Any pickleball players in the crowd today? Any pickleball? I see a couple of, how about Mahjong? Is Mahjong taking root here? Oh, lots more Mahjong hands. How about poker? Any poker? A couple of, fair enough. But those are those kinds of connections, right, that you make. And there's no copay involved with that.
Not at all.
Right? There's no explanation of benefits that's going to come with that. And so how does a health span effort like this in a community in Southwest Florida that is somewhat seasonal try to encourage that? What are those building blocks?
Well, it's a lot of partners around. And, you know, FGCU cannot do this on their own. The Shady Rest Institute Positive Aging cannot do this on its own. It's a matter of individual partners across the way in all of these areas, be it education, be it recreation, be it, you know, the Cape Coral mayor is just here, you know, the park systems, you know, finding projects that will navigate that forward. And I'm very proud of our consultants that's been working with us. We have about 10 great projects that's moving forward today, just starting really from March. And as I said, it's a bold, audacious goal, and it's going to take a lot of individuals to move this forward. But, I think now being – the first part is understanding there is a challenge. Mm-hmm. So now we're trying to attack that, and that putting metrics in play can see if we're making progress or not. And as I said, there's not one magic piece that's going to do this for everyone.
We're talking about expanding one's health span, living healthy. Here at the Tribby Arts Center, we're live in Fort Myers on the Florida Roundup, talking about this effort to expand the health span in Southwest Florida by 7 years by 2040. Sean Felton is our guest, the Dean of the College of Health and Human Services at Florida Gulf Coast University, who is directing this effort to expand the health span in Florida. Christina has been listening here, Sean, and writes, the number one issue is being able to afford health care. Small businesses and individuals are spending a ton of money to health insurance. It's time for universal health care, Christina writes. People don't have time to take off, not enough doctors, and because health care is tied to employment, people stay in jobs that they might otherwise have moved on from. How to address that affordability and that accessibility piece? And I want to ask specifically toward an older community that we're in here doing this live program. And I want to phrase the question this way. How does the traditional Medicare fee-for-service model, mm-hmm. that is the great majority of Medicare spending and insurance, how does that influence health choices as you're trying to bend the curve and increase a health span?
Yeah, so there's not, once again, one magic answer to that.
Of course.
But, it's a very complex situation, both with private payer, Medicare, Medicaid, so, you know, Medicaid for the younger adult.
Yep.
The biggest piece that I see is the chronic disease issue. If you look across these are stats, these are factoids. Mm-hmm. The U.S. spends per capita more per healthcare than any other developed country. But yet we have some of the worst health outcomes.
That's right.
And so, we just did a study abroad trip for comparative health in Merritt College for some students, and we looked at some other systems that mm-hmm. we went to. And for an example, the French system, not saying it's better or worse, any chronic disease is paid for, mm-hmm. for that care once that person's been diagnosed with heart disease, chronic disease, diabetes, et cetera.
Through tax dollars.
Through tax dollars, exactly.
Yep.
So, but, I think a lot of this is if how do we change those outcomes? We need to really focus on those chronic diseases and find that preventative piece. Now, that doesn't affect someone that's already there.
Yeah.
But it will generationally make a change for that. In the immediate, it's a matter of really trying to, increase the access opportunities. Mm-hmm. I know for the, lower socioeconomic group, we have a lot of great neighborhood health clinics, et cetera, that works towards that. And it is a challenge to address that. And it's especially, I think we were just talking about, obviously fixed income,
yep.
medical bills
yep.
and prescription medicines.
Inflation all over the place. Gas prices,
so
food. Yeah.
There's a lot of challenges. And the access is transportation as well.
Hmm.
I find that to be a challenge versus you're in a large metropolitan area. You've
mm-hmm.
got a much more efficient public transport.
Yeah.
After
all, where
well.
We're talking has Point in its name. You can kind of imagine the geography of a place called Shell Point. What are some of the, as you've begun this effort around health span, what are some of the state policies that you've been able to identify and kind of look at and say, oh, there may be some work here that could encourage healthier living for longer?
Yeah, I think, Senator Pasadoma's bill last year was very positive.
Kathleen Pasadoma.
Yeah, Kathleen Pasadoma.
State senator from Southwest Florida.
Very positive in terms of her health care access
mm-hmm.
bill.
Yep.
Has done a lot with that. So I think, that is the starting point to move forward. So really appreciate there. I think a place that I really see is the opportunity of prevention. Again, not to lean on that over and over, but I think if we can start educating an incentivizing,
yep,
preventative type strategy,
yep,
that's going to be a way to really advance where we're going.
All right, so let me ask you, point out this here, and this comes from Frank, who's listening in Orlando. Frank, it's great to have you along on the email. He says, "Dear Tom, food is medicine. Nutrition and good health has many resources in these times. Keep moving and connections combat loneliness." But that food is medicine piece, right? When you talk, mm-hmm, about prevention, so much of it, yes, exercise is important, but for so many of us, no matter how much we exercise, there's still a little bit more here as I'm touching my belly, right, than I would prefer, but it's diet.
It is diet.
Yeah.
And you know, healthy diet, you know, and I think there's an adage, oftentimes people think eating healthy is more expensive when it's not. If you really make the choices, but then you look at lifestyle, the busyness that we all have,
sure,
especially, you know, the middle age,
yeah,
individuals, where we get a little extra there,
mm-hmm,
is a challenge. But I would agree that, you know, proper food intake and eating the right things, mm-hmm, is very important. Obviously, so much of the saturated foods and, you know, the processed foods are damaging us as well.
So as you're going about this here, Sean, how will you know you're making progress, making success, that Floridians are leading longer, healthier lives?
Well, as I said, we've got some metrics set up,
yep,
using the eight dimensions of in suit on health, and really starting to track that. But then it's going to be some of those are long-term measures to track. It's going to be the interim pieces on seeing projects and getting some early wins, you know, working closely with Collier County Superintendent about with her student body and getting enough access to care for their, mm-hmm, area as well. We've got some meetings scheduled. And so it's both the large metrics that you're going to see some actual state data, chamber data come through, but then also, you know, seeing successes in projects.
Yeah.
But it's going to take an entire community. It's going,
right,
to take a lot of work, and we're ambitious.
Sean Felton with Florida Gulf Coast University. We appreciate you, Sean. Thank you very much for being here, and best of luck in your health span effort to make sure that we try to lead healthier lives and longer lives throughout Florida. We got more to come here. Joanne Hartley and the Jazz Trio is with us as we're live from the Tribby Arts Center. We are going to be talking about the health of the Caloosahatchee River, one of the great rivers here in the Sunshine State along the peninsula. Tom Bayless, the senior environmental reporter with our partner station WGCU, will be live with us. I'm Tom Hudson, and you are listening to the Florida Roundup from your Florida Public Radio station. It's Joanne on piano, Warren on percussion, and Terry on the bass. It is the Hartley Jazz Trio live on this Friday in the Florida Roundup from the Tribby Arts Center at the Shell Point Retirement Community. It's terrific to have our live audience here in Fort Myers. We're going to hear a little bit more from the Hartley Jazz Trio before we say goodbye to everybody on this Friday, so stick around for that. All right, here as we are in Fort Myers on the shore of the Caloosahatchee and the Gulf, who remembers the summer of 2018? We got a few hands up. All right, well, oh, there are some more. Yeah, they remember 2018, sure, because it's been a while. It's been a minute, 8 years, but anybody who was here in Fort Myers at the time, you can probably still smell that summer of 2018, right? Yeah, Florida experienced the worst blue-green algae outbreak in history. Marine life was really taken for a hit, a huge economic toll on coastal communities like those here in Lee County. It was so bad that the state, in fact, formed a special task force in response to it to prevent such an event from happening again. And they made recommendations to lawmakers to improve water quality and improve water management. But some environmental groups have warned that these guidelines have not been properly implemented, leaving Florida's waterways still vulnerable this many years later. So could we experience another massive bloom? What's preventing another algae crisis from blossoming again off our shores? Well, Tom Bayless is along with us now, WGCU's environmental reporter with our partner station here in Fort Myers. Tom, it's great to have you. Thank you for your reporting.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what's the status as the Caloosahatchee and all of Florida enter summer?
Well, summertime is your typical time for blue-green algae? Because while it can happen any time of the year, as was proven this past winter, blue-green algae likes that still warm water, shallow water. And if you've ever seen it, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's blue and green and a little white, and it stays up on top of the water. And it gets all over your boat and your dock and anything else you might have anywhere near the water. You, of course, don't want to get it on yourself or on your animals, because there's still a lot of science that needs to be done about exactly how bad cyanotoxins are for you.
So we've still seen some areas of drought in Florida as we enter summer. We know the temperatures are already plenty hot, so the water is warming up. But it was just 4 months ago, the dead of what passes as winter here in Florida, where we had a blue-green algae here in southwest Florida.
Yeah, that was completely out of character for the Ford blue-green algae. It was Valentine's Day, and one of the local environmental groups, Calusa Waterkeeper, has a pilot that goes up and takes pictures of red tides or whatever, and he just happened to fly up the Calusa Hatchie. And sure enough, from Alva North, or the northern, the northeastern 30, 32 miles of the river, was just coated in blue-green algae one side to the other. There's a really good idea, but nobody actually knows.
Okay.
But in that case, it was most likely that part of the river is very agricultural. Lots of farms.
Yeah.
And there was the drought that was going on, so the water level was low. And as one of the people I spoke to said, is you know, winter is relative in Florida. And when the water is low and it's not moving very much, because the lake was low, and of course the lake feeds...
Lake Okeechobee
feeds the Caloosahatchee River, so that wasn't happening. And as the water level went down, a lot of the nutrients came in, and... that's what really feeds blue-green algae, is nitrogen and phosphorus, which you find in fertilizer.
So as we mentioned, in 2018, this, one of the state responses to that outbreak was this task force with recommendations. Then you get this massive outbreak, unseasonal, in February, in the dead of winter in southwest Florida. What were warnings like?
Well, that is something that we're looking at WGCU, because the Department of Health is supposed to go, and whenever there's a blue-green algae outbreak, their responsibility is to post it and say, hey, there's a blue-green algae outbreak. Keep your dog out of it, because it's very dangerous to animals. You may not want to go in it if you have certain health problems. And for some reason, while the outbreak was just as big as they get, the Department of Health failed to do anything in terms of notifying the public. So for the week that blue-green algae outbreak occurred, there was no warning signs. There was no press releases put out that ourselves and other media organizations would run. But concurrently, some of the smaller little outbreaks on canals off the river, they put out warnings about those. So we're trying to figure out exactly why that happened.
What are the agencies involved with this if it were kind of a normal process, if the warnings had been posted?
Well, the Department of Environmental Protection, along with the local water management agencies, in our case, that's the South Florida Water Management District, they do the testing along with places like the Lee County Environmental Lab. And when they have an outbreak, they turn that over to the Department of Health. And the Department of Health is the agency that's supposed to, of course, watch out for our health and put these signs up. But there is a little bit of a loophole, and that is that they don't have to put the signs up. They make a decision whether to or not. And we're trying to figure out why they do that for the small outbreaks, but they didn't do that for the big ones.
Yeah, is it clear what triggers the warning? What is that piece that they say we can do this and we should do this and we will do this?
It's supposed to be the Department of Environmental Protection turning over that data, saying this is, you know, a dangerous situation. Let's let the public know. And in this case, they didn't. And we have not been able to get the kind of answers that we normally can. So we are still looking into that, and we will continue doing so until we get answers for our audience and the general public as well.
Any after effects of the 2018 piece? Yes, and thank you for that reporting.
No, that broke up and moved down the river in little pieces, and it just kind of went away. We got lucky, because that's the sort of thing that started the 2018 outbreak. It just didn't make it all the way down the river this time.
Tom Bayless, the senior environmental reporter for our partner station WGCU here in Fort Myers. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting
with us,
Tom. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Tom.
This is a live edition of the Florida Roundup here as we're live from the Tribune Arts Center in Fort Myers at the Shell Point Retirement Community. And finally, how about some more music, Joanne? Let's take us out on this Friday. The Joanne Hartley Jazz Trio. Joanne Hartley on piano. Warren Myers on percussion. Terry Schilling on bass. Guys, take it away. Let's play it out into the weekend. Joanne, get us going for one more as we move on into the weekend, and we have to say goodbye, unfortunately, because our time is coming to an end here on the Florida Roundup. Yeah, keep going. Let's hear some more. It's the best way to get going on a Friday as we say hello to the weekend. The jazz trio here with Joanne on piano, Warren Myers on percussion, Terry Schilling on bass. You guys get underway, and I'm going to talk over the music a little bit here because I need to remind you that the Florida Roundup is produced by WLRN Public Media in Miami with assistance from WUSF in Tampa. The program is produced by Bridget O'Brien. Denise Royal is WLRN Senior Producer of Content Streaming and News Products. She's with us here in Fort Myers. Thank you so much for your help, Denise. Thank you, Bridget, for helping out from Jacksonville this week as well. WLRN's Director of Live Programming is Katie Munoz, and the Vice President of Radio is Peter Maris. The program's Technical Director is MJ Smith, keeping everything going in Miami. Thanks, MJ. Engineering help here on site from Doug Peterson. No one better on the road than Doug Peterson. Anderson, Harvey Broussard, and Ernesto J helping out at HQ in Miami. Live music this hour, of course, from the Hartley Jazz Trio. Big thanks to our partner here in Southwest Florida, WGCU in Fort Myers, and, of course, the Shell Point Retirement Community for hosting us. What a great organization. We are happy to be here. The financial support for the Florida Roundup on the Road is provided in part by Florida Public Media, whose mission is to be a trusted, dependable, and welcome part of the lives of all Floridians. So thank you for listening and supporting public media